News Talk on demand. Interruption-free audio. Where you want it, when you want it.
It's a frosty Sunday morning to get started, but gardening is always on our mind. I'm Erin McNutt. If you have a question for today, you can give us a call or a text at 1-877-332-8255. As always, Rick Van Dyvendyke from Dutch Growers is with us today. Rick, how are you?
Good morning, Erin. I'm doing good. It looks like February has gone past us by.
Yeah, it was, it went by really, really, I know it's the shortest month, but it was both very short and very long, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. It makes total sense with how, you know, now we've gone from, you know, the deep freeze.
Mm-hmm.
So to a couple little reprieves in mixed in between.
Yep.
To now this week where it looks like right across the province, we have a cool night, a cool day to live, a cooler day today, and a cool night tonight, and then the rest of the week, starting tomorrow.
Oh, it looks beautiful.
Above normal temperatures.
We're just all over the place, really.
We're all over the place. But you know what, that whole, with the whole temperature getting above zero, and I see down in Regina, I mean, they're going to be up around 10 degrees.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing they're going to have to watch for when it gets that warm. Usually we get wind with it as well. And,
yeah.
We have to watch for our cedars and junipers. If you've had issues with them burning in the past, that kind of weather, you won't notice it right away. You'll notice it in May and June, but you'll start turning, they'll turn brown. So make sure that this week, if you have any juniper or cedars that you've had issues with, make sure you put some burlap around them this week. Just wrap them up. And because you're just trying to shade them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's never that cold weather we had this last month that hurts the plants. It's the warm weather in March and in the first 2 weeks of April when the ground is still frozen that really dehydrates them and they can't replenish their moisture. So either burlap, or you can use, if you can't do burlap, you can always use something like FoliGuard or Wiltproof, it's called. You can spray it on.
Okay.
As long as it's above zero, and it basically puts a wax coating on the needles. And it just, it protects them. And for out in the farms and acreages, you can always just, if you can't, you got a whole bunch of plants that you can't really do anything, these little, you know, 3 foot spruces that are sticking out of the ground. One way you can do it is if you have any wood ash or anything that would make the ground and the snow a different color. So just sprinkling some wood ash on top of blacking up the snow, which will stop the reflection.
Okay.
Off the ground, and that will help the tips from all not turning purple this next spring. So that's something you can do as well, because it's a little tougher to wrap every single tree when you have a row of 100 of them or something like that, you know?
Yeah, now that we're kind of getting into that sort of, you know, that kind of weird period where we get a few days of really, really nice warm weather, this is probably the perfect time to start thinking about that stuff.
And also, just in your homes, you watch, when it goes up to 10 degrees like it will in Regina, on the south side of your house, is this going to be like 15 to 18 degrees up against the house?
Yeah.
The snow will melt away, and then all of a sudden we could get cold again, and those plants will be exposed. So make sure that you keep the snow, throw it up against all your perennials. The perennials and your maybe you got some tulip bulbs or whatever up against the house. So make sure that you, or maybe hydrangeas or other plants that might be a little more tender,
mm-hmm.
keep the snow piled up around them. There is some more snow around the yard, obviously, so even if you have to haul it from the front to the back, keep them covered with snow, and that will protect them until we get to more into April, when then the plants can, you know, doesn't have such a long time with the weather fluctuations, because then we don't get into the extreme cold temperatures anymore.
Yeah, you kind of give them that extra layer of insulation to make it to the consistently nice weather.
And you know what? You don't have to put a foot of snow on top of them. Just a couple, even an inch or two of snow.
Mm-hmm.
Consistently on top of them, that's enough to insulate them, because you got some heat radiating out of the basement, you know, of your house. And
yeah.
So that's all you need. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to haul a truckload of snow back there. You just need just a little bit to keep a skiff of snow on top of the ground. That's all they need.
We must have inspired some people here, because we're starting to get a pretty decent flow of texts coming in to 1-877-332-8255. So maybe we'll dive in, take a couple here before we go to our first break. This question is from Hal in Radville. Is there any advantage to using soil treatments such as MX3, fulvic acid, or soil and plant enhancer SPE 120 ES? Very specific.
They got specific. I've never tried those specific ones, but I'm trying to think what they're. You said an acid, right?
Yes, fulvic acid. It looks like.
So it looks like if they're using a type of an acid, it looks like they're trying to get some root promotion happening, right? And so, a root booster has those type of acids in them that help promote root growth. And so if I'm just not sure of the exact name that he's talking about, but I'll have to look into that. So the best thing for him to do is just give me an email at rick@dutchroars.com, and then we can discuss more technical terms, and then I can give him some more information on that.
Perfect. We also have a question from Kayla in Estevan. It says, what are your thoughts on no-till gardens? I've tried planting without tilling and with, and seem to have better root vegetables when I till, but I notice less moisture retention.
Yeah, the biggest thing with rototilling, one thing about rototilling is you pulverize the soil. So if you do a lot of rototilling, you pulverize the soil, and then you lose all that basically soil structure, and that's why you'll lose a lot of your moisture retention, and also you can actually get your soil a lot harder in the end.
Okay.
So, but one thing that's important is that one thing also is you keep rototilling. You notice the rototiller only goes down, you know, maybe, you know, 8 inches or so, depending on how well you rototill. But what happens, you get a hard pan underneath where your rototiller blades hit the bottom, you know, and that's as far as you go. So that hard pan is really hard for those root crops. So what you need to do is every once in a while, you just should take, especially if you do it in the fall, just take a shovel and dig as far down as the shovel can go, and then turn it. And you'll get your soil, your garden will be really lumpy.
Okay.
Just leave those lumps until spring, because the frost will break up all those lumps. And so if you can break up that hard pan, we used to do that in the field all the time. We used to take our plow and then take the blades off and just have the shanks, and then we used to rip the fields up in the fall where we're going to plant the next spring. And it was huge difference. And you couldn't even walk across that field. It was so lumpy. and then in the spring, the frost would break up all those lumps. And then you just ran a cultivator through it. And then it was perfect to plant in. And the plants did really well. So breaking that hard pan is for root crops like carrots and potatoes and beets and radishes. That's important if you can break that hard pan. So every once in a while, you just got to turn the soil with a shovel nice and deep. And that's the best way. And cultivating is probably the best way to work your garden. If you just cultivate it, that's probably the best way. So just using a little hand cultivator, that's the best way to do it.
Well, there you go. We have Jean waiting on the line from Regina. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning.
What's your question for Rick?
I need some nice weather.
Oh, yeah, it's coming.
My question is, I have a very large, well, actually, there's four plants in one pot, a red poinsettia. It's just beautiful. I got it at Christmas time as a gift. I have been watering it once a week. It's doing beautifully. What I want to know is, over the summer, can I put it outside, say, in a brightly shaded area?
Perfect.
And then bring it back in the fall before it gets too cold, and do the light-dark thing?
Perfect. It'll love it.
How much water do I give it, you know, when I'm doing that?
Just treat it like you would all your annuals in your containers or whatever you're going to do. If you're going to plant in the ground, just treat it like you would a shrub out in the yard.
Right.
Okay?
I could transplant it into the ground and then dig it up again?
Absolutely. You could do that, or you can put it in a pot in a dappled light where it's not direct hot sunlight, but it even doesn't matter. It can get some sunlight, but it'll do better if it gets, you know, some sunlight of the day, but, you know, in the hot part of the day it gets shade.
Right.
I remember when I was in Colombia, they were growing in the ditches. And they were 14 feet tall.
Right.
So, I mean, they do grow in hot, that's where they come from, the hot tropical area, so they can take some full sun, but I like them, I see in Saskatchewan, they tend to do better with, in a little bit of shade for the hot part of the day, but you can plant them in the ground, or you can leave them in a container, it doesn't really matter, and then leave them in the ground, leave them there until about September long weekend, and then bring them indoors, and if you want, you can give them a bit of a pruning. Then you can start about the end of September. You start your 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of darkness.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
The I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, no.
Hey, Robert, that's very helpful. I know what I was going to say. If I leave it in the pot,
yep.
would I have to, when I bring it in September, would I have to repot it and put
most, yeah, most
dirt
likely they
would. I'm thinking about bugs and...
Yeah, no, you'll probably have to repot it because it'll be root-bound by that time, okay? So you'll have to repot it into just a little bit bigger pot.
Right. Okay, that's great. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to doing this.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jean.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with myself and Rick Van Dyvendyk from Dutch Growers to answer all of your questions. You can give us a call or text at 1-877-332-8255. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. I'm Erin McNutt. This is Garden Talk. If you have questions you'd like to get into Rick Van Dyvendyk from Dutch Growers, you can give us a call or text at 1-877-332-8255. And Rick, it looks like we're going to be busy. We've had a few people on the line waiting for us through the commercials. So we'll dive right into the calls. We have Judy in Maple Creek. Judy, what's your question for Rick today?
Well, I had called maybe a month ago and spoke about a Bartzella itoa peony.
Okay.
I've had it in the ground 7-8 years, and last year it had 7 or 8 blossoms starting.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as they start to open, they might get 3 inches, 2 inches, and then the next day they've all exploded. And they don't hold. So they were going to check into it, and I wonder if they found out what it was.
We looked into that one. The only thing that happens with that one is when we're looking into that one is that a lot of times it has to do with they explode. It has to do with the type of soil that's put in and the type of moisture it's getting. And so what's happening, and that variety is a matter of just making sure that it's more on the drier side.
Okay,
not wet.
That could be the problem.
Yeah, it has to be more on the drier side. And so if it's in the wet side, then you'll have an issue in the root system, and that's why it can't sustain the flower, okay?
Okay.
So if it is in a wet spot, it will have an issue. So it wants to be, you know...
A little drier, so I might have to move it then.
Because it has to be quite a bit drier, okay?
Yeah.
So
okay, that's not normal with peonies, is it?
No, peonies do like to be in a drier location. Like, they don't need water all the time. And so that's one thing
about
them.
Well, my other 42 of them are doing just fine. It's just that one, but that's the only itoa I have. So.
Yeah. So just if you want to, in the spring, before it even starts to bud, so as soon as the ground is, is the frost out of the ground, then you can move it. And then just move it to a spot where you can monitor the soil and water it differently than the other ones.
Okay. It does have to have full sun, though, or pretty much full sun,
hotter the better.
Hotter the better. Okay.
Yep.
That's what I'll do. Thanks.
Thanks,
okay.
Judy.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right. On hold, we have Lynn in Weyburn. Lynn, what's your question for Rick today?
It's on the alfalfa pellets. I know that they can be worked into the garden, but I was wondering how you'd make a liquid fertilizer, like for plants in pots.
Yeah, if you're going to make a big amount, what I put is 2 cups in a 5-gallon pail of water.
Okay.
I stir it up, and then what I'll do is I'll leave it over at least for 24 hours, 12 to 24 hours, and then I'll stir it again. And then if you want to, you can pour it into. I just pour it straight in the garden. Some people sift it so that especially if you're using it for houseplants, they sift it so you don't have all the green little chunks in it. But otherwise, you pour it in the garden, and it works awesome. And the amount of macro and micronutrients you get with that is amazing, especially calcium. Is a lot of calcium in alfalfa pellets, which help it too. So it's the only thing you got to make sure is that make sure you get a good alfalfa pellets that is weed free. Some of the alfalfa pellets that you get out there, you have to watch that they might have some other weeds in it, and then you don't want to add those to your garden. But if you use it, then I would suggest if you're going to use it as a tea, then you can if you use just the regular horse alfalfa pellets or whatever, just strain it through a cheesecloth or something like that so that you'll extract some of those seeds out before you pour the tea around your garden. But otherwise, some of those ones you can get from Alfalfa Green from Norquay, Saskatchewan, it's been all cleaned so that you don't have any of those products in it.
Okay. If the water was hot or warm, would you get better results?
I use cold water, so I've had really good results in pure sand growing tomatoes. So, no, it doesn't really matter.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks,
okay.
Lynn. All right. We have a couple minutes before we go to news, and we have lots of texts. So maybe we can do a bit of a rapid fire.
Sure.
We have Danielle in Stoughton says, can I have some tips on growing passion flower seeds? Also, how do I keep cilantro from going to seed? And can I start my herbs now? Lots on the go in that one.
Absolutely. Herbs is now you can start them any time of the year, really. Just make sure you got a good bright spot inside the house or some grow light, and they'll do just fine. And so like right in a little, you can get these long little planters that you can put right in the windowsill in your kitchen.
Yeah.
That works really well because they go right up against the window, bright lights, and then they're right handy for when you're doing your cooking. Cilantro, if you wanted to just keep, make sure that to supplement from seed, just make sure you keep pruning them back and then, you know, taking your stuff, and then you can stop them from going from seed that way. And, or otherwise, you need to get a rotation in. So just don't have one plant that can last a long time. Mm-hmm. Have a rotation of seeds that you can put in so that you got fresh cilantro all the time.
Perfect.
And then there was one more question.
Yeah, it was any tips on growing passion flower from seed?
Yeah, bottom heat. So you get a heat map. If you start that, you'll have way better success than just planting the seeds in the ground by themselves. If you use bottom heat, you'll pretty much get anywhere from 85 to 100% germination.
Okay.
So that's the key. And if you want, you can soak the seeds a little bit in some water just for about an hour or two just to get them to loosen up the seeds. But other than that, you can plant them in and use some bottom heat, and then they'll work just fine.
Perfect. This is from Lane in Regina. Says, I hope you have some advice on what tree I can plant close to the house and the deck to block the wind. Hopefully about 15 feet tall. The wind is relentless in the backyard.
Okay, so it sounds like they want it close to the house, so they don't want that wide, obviously. So only 15 feet away from the house, you want to use a more of an upright plant. So a good one for that one is what is it called, a parkland pillar birch.
Okay.
Or you can even, for that distance, you can even get away with Dakota pinnacle birch. Either one of those is more upright and narrow, and they'll do a good job of stopping the wind, and you won't have the root problems you do have get with things like a Swedish aspen or taller poplar, which I don't like planting in the city because they're a bad neighbor plant. The roots go all with the neighbor sucker and those kind of things. So the Dakota pinnacle is a little bit wider, about 9 feet tall, wide, and but it will get about 25 feet tall. That's the only thing, okay? So if you want something shorter than that, then you need to go to something like a purple spire flowering crab. That will work very well as well in that type of narrow spot. Or another one that's called, that's narrow and doesn't get as tall, is that you can use a gold spur Amur cherry. That's a beautiful plant too, and stays narrower, about 6 to 7 feet wide, but only about 8 to 12 feet tall. So
okay, so definitely a few different options to give a try.
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a quick break for news, but we still have lots of time to answer your questions here on Garden Talk. You can give us a call or a text at 1-877-332-8255. We'll take a quick break for news, and then we'll be back right here on Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Erin McNutt, joined by Rick Van Dyvendyke from Dutch Growers. And if you have any questions or want to get in any comments or anything garden related, we can help you out. You can give us a call or text at 1-877-332-8255. And Rick, we've had a bit of a request off air here. If you can give us your email again for people that might have some specific questions, but aren't totally sure, I guess, how to ask them.
Yeah, rick@dutchgrowers.com.
Perfect. And then that way they can, if they have maybe a picture or something, they can get it to you that way?
That's a very nice way to do it, because a picture is 1,000 words.
I know I've had a few houseplants where I have no idea what I'm talking about, and I'll go to Dutch Growers and say, "What's this?" And then I get all sorts of help. So
it's huge, actually. So
All right. We have a few texts coming in. Looks like we're going to be pretty busy, so we'll just dive right in. This one is from Dustin in Saskatoon. It says, I started hot pepper seeds in late January, but there's still no sign of sprouting. Could it be a temperature issue?
Yeah. Bottom heat is huge. Temperature is huge. And also, depending whether they're new seed or not, you may have wanted, if you still have some seeds left, just do a quick germination test. So just take some seeds, put them into a moist paper towel, and fold the paper towel over and have them inside, and then just set them either in a plastic bag or just even on a dish or something like that. Within a day or two, you should get some sprouting, so make sure there's actually viable seeds you have, number one. Okay. But if you have bottom heat, it's huge. They will germinate way quicker, but they do take longer to germinate. That's why in the hot peppers, that's why we start them in basically in February and the end of January, so they do take a little bit longer to germinate. But on bottom heat, if you buy one of those, what they call a heat mat, it fits on, it's 10 inches by 20 inches, and it fits perfectly underneath a bedding plant tray, like a growing tray, and it works perfectly, and then you can turn your plants over very quickly on even one tray. It doesn't take very long for them to germinate in that tray, and then you can just start a new set after that and just keep reusing it every year.
Just get everything going a little bit quicker.
Yes, it's huge. I mean, every greenhouse has heat cables on their seed starting areas, and you won't find a greenhouse that doesn't have the heat cables.
We have a question from Diane in Langham. It's about three amaryllis bulbs in wax. They've finished blooming, and they're just kind of hanging limp now. She's not sure what to do with them, but would like to know.
Yeah, okay. So what you need to do is you need to peel that wax off, and there's a little wire cage on the bottom of it as well that holds them upright so they don't fall over, so it keeps them flat. And so then what you need to do is carefully peel that wax off there and take that cage off, and then you can take that and plant it into a pot, and then it'll root into that pot, and then treat it like a house plant. You can even put it outside for the summertime, and then next, basically September long weekend, bring it indoors and then transplant it again one more time about the end of September, and then it'll bloom for you by Christmas again.
All right, perfect. We have a question about onions from Chris in the Prince Albert area. Says they start to grow over the last couple of years. They've been having some issues with onions. They'll start to grow as the summer goes on. They die off one by one. The stalks turn brown and wilt, and then the bulb gets some rot in them. They're changing location every year, but is there anything they can do to stop this?
Yeah, you get an onion maggot. So what happens is that the larva's in the soil, so you need to move them. So that's good they've been doing that. Mm-hmm. So what you need to do now is that when you plant your onion bulbs or seed or whatever you're doing in the ground, is that what you want to do is you want to put it into a different location, and then you want to put what we call a ground cover over top of them. It's a white fabric.
Okay.
Okay, because what happens is that the larva will come out of, emerge out of the soil as a fly, and they'll hang around things like things that are yellow.
Oh.
Okay, so the dandelions obviously is what is yellow in the spring,
yep.
Right? And then as soon as they pop out of the soil, they'll go and lay their eggs onto the new stalks of the onions, okay, popping out of the soil. And then when those eggs hatch, they go down into the bulb. So if you can put a white crop cover over top of them, and there's ones you can get with little ring hoops on them so they act like a little greenhouse,
okay.
It'll keep them off. Or what you can do also is you can put some little sticky traps out there too. They're yellow. There's some yellow sticky traps you can put out there, and that'll attract them, and then they get stuck on the sticky traps, and then that'll work to help them to go after that instead of after your new onions popping out of the soil.
And that's the goal.
Absolutely.
We have Ted in Regina waiting on the line for us. Good morning, Ted.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Just a quick question. I kind of missed that lady's call or part of it. When I'm using, I've never used alfalfa, and yeah. I want to put it in the garden. Are you saying I have to turn it into tea first?
Nope.
Or do I mulch it in like when I'm rototilling?
Yeah, you can mulch it in like you're rototilling. That's fine. And so you can either do it either way. So you don't have to use it as just that way. So you can either, basically what I'm using, depending how big your garden is, But if you use it's just a straight pellet, and you can work it when you rototill your garden in, you just rototill it into the top 2 inches of the soil, okay? And then so rototill your garden or whatever, you turn your garden over, and then just put a layer over top, and then just work it slightly into the soil after that, and then you can plant into it. And or if you want, you can incorporate it, work it, just lightly work it with your fingers into the soil after you've planted next to the rows of plants if you want. But you're going to use probably about a 50-pound bag for a 10 by 10 to 10 by 15 garden. And then you'll have lots of nutrients there for the whole summer.
Okay. And just the other question I was going to ask was, if I don't buy the pellets and I'm just buying like the seed starter you said last week, the type of soil for myself inside, do I compress it very hard before I go to seed?
No. Like,
do you do it, leave it fairly loose?
Yeah, you want to fairly loose. You can give it just a little bit of a compact with your hand, but fairly loose. And cause okay. I just want to don't want to settle so that you got, 6 inches of soil left in the top of your pots or something like that, okay? But otherwise, just pack it just a slight little bit, but I don't want to step on it or anything like that, okay? That's what you don't want to do. You don't want to compact it that tight. But just a little bit of press so that you, or what you can do is water it, let it settle, and then top it off, and then seed if you want as well.
Okay. And then you had said paper towel for a day or whatever. Some lady has told me now at the store, banana peels, peel a banana, eat it, and put them in there for a day.
Yep. The only thing I worry about banana peels, okay, you have to watch for. Most seeds will be okay, but some seeds, especially bulbs and that kind of stuff, the ethylene gas from the bulbs are not good, okay? So that's the only thing you have to watch for. That's why I like just using paper towel. It's just simple. I have it anyway, some Jiffy towel, and it works really well for doing that kind of stuff.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Ted.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but you still have time to get your questions in to Rick. Just give us a call or text at 1-877-332-8255. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. This is Garden Talk. I'm Erin McNutt. If you have any questions, you can give us a call or text at 1-877-332-8255. And of course, you'll be asking the expert, Rick Van Dyvendyk from Dutch Growers. Rick, we have someone who's been waiting for us for a little while through the commercials here. So I feel like we shouldn't make him wait any longer. It's
perfect.
Scott in Estevan. Scott, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks. What's your question for Rick today?
It was so mild in the fall that I didn't get a chance to prune my apple tree, so I'm just wondering about timing here for the spring.
Yeah, anytime in March or the first week of April is perfect. That's actually technically the best time to prune them is month of March, and the first week to week and a half of April is the best time. I also prune in the fall in October, November, but the best time is March and the first week of April.
Perfect. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Scott.
You bet. Bye.
All right. We have lots of texts to get to as well. But if you want to give us a call, you can use the same number, 1-877-332-8255. This text is from Norm in Regina. Norm says, should you put bone meal in the garden before you plant?
Yeah, you could actually, bone meal is perfect. That would add lots of calcium to this plant. You'll have less problems with things like blossom end rot, and it'll just make the plants healthier. They can stand with diseases a lot better if they have calcium. Mm-hmm. And so the bone meal is a great one. You can put in, you can either put in right in the rows. That's what I suggest you do, is if you pull a furrow and put your seeds in there and just sprinkle some bone meal down before you cover up your seeds. That's probably one of the best ways to get it right near where the seed is, and they'll do really good.
All right. We have a question from Patty in Melfort, wondering how you recommend starting sweet potatoes.
sweet potatoes, you have to start indoors. You can't start them outside because our season's not long enough.
Okay.
So if you do have some sweet potatoes, you have to start them indoors, and you can start them indoors usually around the beginning of April. Mm-hmm. And then you have to grow them in, obviously grow them in a pot or something like that. And then you need to get them started, and then you can put them outside to finish them off. But if you just plant them like we traditionally plant regular potatoes, you won't get a crop by the end of the season. Our season is just not long enough. That's why you don't see a seed for growing in our gardens that much in the stores. You have to start early indoors.
Okay. So the earlier, the better.
Earlier, the better.
We have a question about Viking and Yukon Gold potatoes. Karen in Dalmany says they planted the Viking and Yukon Gold potatoes last year, and when they get cooked, they're mushy. Could they have a problem with the soil that would cause this?
Yeah, if they're getting mushy, they shouldn't get mushy because they should last almost till Christmas time or past. Mm-hmm. That they're usually pretty good. So it's funny that the Yukon Gold, they're having trouble with that. And it might not be an issue this year because actually the Yukon Gold, there's going to be an issue with them this year. There's a shortage of them.
Okay.
So you might have to try a different white one anyways.
Yeah.
But I would try a different location, obviously, and it's it has to be probably location and make sure that you don't overwater them. That'll be the big thing. And then also, if they're getting mushy, make sure that there's no little brown little marks through the potatoes, that you're not getting a worm in the potatoes, that which will cause them to go mushy in storage afterwards as well. So watch for that. And then so you may have to put a nematode into the soil to stop that from happening. Nematode is another insect that goes after mm-hmm. those type of other bugs, okay?
So it could be a couple of things, I guess.
Just location, and you may have to take a rest for 1 year.
Oh, okay.
If you're moving and you still have a problem, you may have to take a rest for 1 year and just plant other crops like beans or peas and those kind of things, mm-hmm. and then you can go back to planting potatoes the next year.
All right, perfect. We have Ken waiting for us on the line in Saskatoon. Ken, what's your question for Rick today?
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. I've got a big elm tree that's been giving us some good shade up at the lake. And this is at Goshen. And we've had a big ice storm up there so that the ice is trapped up underneath our bank and lifted. You know, it's lifted in my rock wall. It's lifted the elm tree maybe up about 2 feet.
Oh.
And I'm just wondering if you think it might settle back once the ice that's pushed up underneath it melts in the spring. And
yeah, a lot of times that will settle right down again. That's amazing that it pushed the tree up that far because it's quite the root system, you know.
Yeah,
A lot of times it'll settle down, but it won't hurt the plant. The plant should be okay even if it doesn't settle down, unless it's being a problem otherwise. Now, if you do need to do some pruning on elm trees, you only have the month of March to prune them. It's illegal to prune elm trees after April 1st, okay? April 1st is the cutoff time. So if you have to go up there and do some pruning, you need to do it this month. Otherwise, we need to protect the elms, and that's why if you prune them after April 1st, then they bleed and they attract the elm beetle, and that's what you could attract the Dutch elm disease. So that's why we're trying to protect all the elms in Saskatchewan. So if you got to do your pruning, you have to do it this month if you need to go do some pruning. But otherwise, it should settle down. But if it doesn't, it shouldn't hurt the plant. The plant should be okay. So.
Yeah. So it's a huge tree, and so you'd think that the pressure might just settle it.
The pressure should settle it down just like they do. And I have a concrete slab at the garden center that heaves and it goes right back down every year. And with the weight of the tree, I think it should settle back down again.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ken.
Okay. Bye now.
All right. We only have a couple minutes left, but we'll get to Terry in Crystal Springs. Terry, what's your question for Rick?
I got a question on sweet potatoes. 2 years ago, I planted some seed potatoes, and they did really, really good. And then last year, I planted leftover ones from the year before, and they didn't do as good.
Yeah, that's typical, because the ones that are left over aren't, 9 times out of 10, aren't as viable as the ones that when you get the seed potatoes that are certified and don't have any pathogens or anything from the soil from the previous, okay?
I see. So just throw the old ones away kind of thing.
Yeah. The old ones, sometimes they work well, but honestly, like 50% of the time, honestly, they it doesn't work out as well. So that's why you want to use fresh sea potatoes, because they're certified, they make sure they're clean, they don't have any pathogens on them, and then you'll have way better success. And you know, 50% of the time, some people have no issues with them planting the old one, but if there's anything wrong in your soil, then you'll have problems just returning to your soil every year. So plant in a different location and use new seed, and then you usually have no problems whatsoever.
Unfortunately, I forgot what kind they were. Could you give me a recommendation?
If you want white ones, Yukon Gold is a really good one. If you want a red one, a lot of people still use the old Norlands. That was really good. If you want to try something different, if you can find them, the Carib, which is a purple one, but it has a white flesh. It's a huge potato, and it really tastes good, but they're going to be in short supply this year, so you have to get them early if you're going to get them.
Carib?
Carib.
Okay, I'll give that a try.
Okay.
I appreciate the information.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Have a good one, Terry.
Thank you. Bye now.
All right, we have about a minute left, so we'll start Gloria's question, but we might have to finish the answer off air. Gloria, what's your question for Rick today?
Hi, I have an elm tree. There's two trunks going up from the bottom, and the one of them, when it was really bitterly cold, we looked out one morning and it had cracked right up the middle of the trunk, probably 4 feet.
Yes.
And we're wondering if there's anything we can do other than just take the whole tree down.
No, this a lot of times that's called a frost crack.
Yes.
Depends on the moisture level from the fall, the previous fall.
Yes.
And then you get temperature fluctuations, and just like any wood, you'll get expansion, contraction. You'll get all of a sudden you hear a big bang one morning, and then you'll hear a crack.
Yeah.
Okay, so what you want to do is that you just leave it, and then usually by about midsummer, that crack will close up and it will start to heal over, okay?
Oh, good.
Easy as that.
Yeah. Well,
they're really big. It's a really big tree.
Yeah.
Sorry, I gotta cut you off here, but we'll keep talking to you off air. You've been listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.